Thursday, June 5th. This is Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt.
You know, Avi, my entire career, I've worked under the assumption that you work at least 40 hours a week, 8 hours a day. What if we've been wrong? What if we could actually work 32 hours a week? Same pay.
I'm listening.
Get the same amount of work done. Well, we have a guest that's going to be on the show that says you can, that we're just as productive. And guess what? We're happier when we have an extra day off.
That part I buy.
Yeah. We're going to be talking about the 4-day work week. And in preparing for today's show, I learned that Americans typically work more hours than folks in nearly every other developed country. And we're tired. We want to find a way to get all of our work done and still have a life. And so we're going to talk about that. We have a lot of questions. We're skeptical people by nature, or curious people.
I would say I approach this whole conversation with skepticism on one hand and hope on the other.
Hope,
of course, I want to believe.
Yeah, hope
but
skepticism.
Do I believe?
Yeah.
Well, we'll see at the end of the hour.
And by the way, our big question for you today is this. If your boss offered you a 4-day week starting tomorrow, no pay cut, could you get all your work done? And what would you do with that extra day off? And employers, we want to hear from you too. Would you offer that to your employees? Do you think that your company would be just as productive? You can give me a call, 888, or give us a call, 888.
Wait. You're about to
give our
producers
a call.
Number?
Look, now this is my number.
215.
888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube, be sure to drop
Cherry's
your comments in the live
Cherry
chat. 888-477-9499. By the way, it's Thursday.
DJ of the day, folks. We always end the week with a song picked by one of you, and it's got to be on the theme of the Thursday show. I will warn you in advance, if you pick the song 9 to 5 by Dolly Parton, producer Paige has already told me, and I'm giving you this information because I like you. She has already told me she's not going to pick it, okay?
You're going to get a buzzer.
I also said, what was the one? I didn't work hard for the money, the Donna Summer.
Yeah,
just be more creative is all we're saying. Don't pick the most obvious work songs out there, but give us a good work song, all right?
There's a lot of them, too.
Email them to producer Paige, studio2@whyy.org. And for every email we get today, not just for DJ of the Day, but for the whole show, you get a chance to win a pair of tickets to a tribute concert to Bruce Springsteen and Tom Petty. It features the band Born to Run Down the Dream. It's tomorrow night in King of Prussia. Get your emails in and we'll reach out to the winners after today's show. And Bruce Springsteen, very apropos because he is the boss.
Yeah.
And we're talking about whether bosses should offer 4-day work weeks. So, anyways, if you're interested in that, email us.
We hope that our boss is listening and learning as we are as well. And I see some fist pumps from the
from the producers and the engineers. So let's get to a trio of local news stories before we run out of time here. First story up today. If you're driving in the car right now listening to this program, I have a warning for you. You better not be using your cell phone.
Don't do it.
Because starting today, you may not operate any type of handheld device while driving a car in Pennsylvania. And this includes if you're stopped at a red light. You might be thinking, wait a second, it was legal to do that before? Yes, it was actually, except if you were texting. It was illegal to text and drive. Now it's illegal to do anything with that cell phone unless you're using hands-free technology. If you're caught within the next year, you get a written warning. After that, a $50 fine. So do not use that cell phone while you're driving.
Yeah. And so many people are guilty at the stoplights, at the stop signs. I mean, how many times have you had to toot your horn after the light turns green because somebody is looking down and they're toying with their phone? And this is a pretty serious thing, by the way, because according to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, in 2023, 3,275 people were killed and 324,000 plus people were injured. And distraction-related crashes in America. So this is a serious issue.
It's the leading cause of crashes in Pennsylvania. Distracted driving, not drunk driving, at least according to PennDOT.
Yep. So today is the day.
Yep. Get off your phone. And go out to a street festival.
Yes.
Enjoy life.
Yes. The Odunde Festival will celebrate its 50th anniversary this Sunday. And if you have never heard of Odunde, let me explain. It is the country's largest African American cultural street festival, and it attracts hundreds of thousands of people from all over the region and all over the country, actually. It takes over 15 city blocks and is centered around the west side of South Street, just on the edge of Center City, Philadelphia. It is run by CEO Ocean Bumi Fernandez West. Her late mother, Lois Fernandez, co-founded the festival back in 1975. Bumi was a baby, okay, at the very first Odunde. She took over when she was 20, and her son, who is 20 now, is now been named the COO.
It's like a family business.
It's a family business. And let me tell you, it has become an economic powerhouse for the city. It brings about $30 million worth of economic impact in just one day.
Mm.
So it's huge. And by the way, if you're watching on YouTube, we have a little video from, I've gone every year for the past 15 years that I've been in Philadelphia. If you take a look and listen on the radio, you'll see and hear the culture all around you.
What are we listening to here?
So it's a sea of people. There are drummers. There are people dancing. There are performers. People walk around on stilts. There are hundreds vendors. Yes, there are hundreds of vendors. You can buy T-shirts, earrings, art. There's food vendors.
Seems like you like Odunde.
I do. And there's parties in the street.
I love that.
And you can get like frothy drinks. It's just a ton of fun. You can bring your grandma. You can bring the kiddos. It's great.
If I were ever to run for mayor of Philadelphia, and I wouldn't, it would be on a pro street festival agenda. More street festivals. There should be like at least one. There should be like at least five good ones every good weather weekend in Philadelphia. They're the best.
They are the absolute best. And by the way, they do have two stages where you will hear free concerts.
Free.
Yeah. And if you're an old school hip hop fan, they'll have Rakim and Dougie Fresh. Okay.
Those are big names.
Big names. And they'll be for free. You can hear them and enjoy it. Yeah. Sunday.
Story number three. We're going from South Philadelphia to West Philadelphia now.
Mm-hmm.
There is a new bin store in West Philadelphia called Amazing Bins with a Z. And our friend Jen Kinney spent a week there and recently wrote actually a really thought-provoking piece about the bin store in West Philadelphia for the website Defector. So you might be asking at this point, what's a bin store?
Break it down.
Well, when big companies overstock a product or a customer returns something they don't want, all of that gets consolidated and loaded up onto pallets. And every Thursday, a bunch of those pallets get dropped off at Amazing Bins in West Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And then, as the name suggests, all of that merchandise gets dumped into huge bins. It's basically like one step up from dumpster diving.
Oh, goodness.
Well, no, I didn't mean that in a bad way at all.
But it is.
Yeah. So if you show up on Friday when everything is fresh,
mm-hmm.
you can get anything in any of those bins for $10.
Not a bad price.
Right. Then each day the price drops because presumably the good stuff has already been picked out. And by the next Wednesday, each item that's still left in those bins only costs $1. And so what Jen did is she profiled the people who opened the store, the people shopping there, and kind of, I would say philosophized about what it says about our consumer economy, mm-hmm. what the bin store means. By the way, in those bins, Cherry, very wide range of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
As you might imagine.
I can only imagine.
In the West Philadelphia bin store, they got air fryers, like electronics.
Wow, that's like a piece of gold right there. Yeah. People love air fryers.
Mm-hmm. A chicken shredder. Don't know what that is.
Okay.
My Little Pony diapers.
Ooh.
Scooters. A product for, quote, waxing your nose beard, which I guess is a mustache, but
okay.
I'm not sure.
A nose beard. Okay.
What did you think about the West Philly bin store?
Well, first of all, I don't have it in me to sift through bins. I just don't. But, you know, I always wondered what would happen, what happens to the things you return. I've returned stuff I buy from Amazon, and apparently it goes to these bins.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, they buy this stuff and they resell it on eBay. That's what people are making a killing doing that.
That's the most fascinating part is that stuff that gets funneled down to these bin stores then gets recirculated back into the consumer economy, sometimes at a higher price. Like the web of consumerism in this country is so vast and so complicated.
To me, this is a whole show on because we're addicted to buying stuff, and people are going in here to feed their addiction. So
it leads to the question, and I think this story gets into it, is the bin store kind of cool and a nice way to save money, or is it like depressing that it exists, right? So, and I think she gets into that in the story of like, what does the bin store mean to people?
Mm.
And there's layers to it that you wouldn't really expect.
This is going to get deep. We're going to have to do a show about this. It's so interesting.
We could do a show from a bin store.
Oh, goodness gracious.
From inside a bin.
Oh my, that's a lot. That's a lot, Avi Wolfman Arendt.
Producers, engineers, can we arrange that? Show inside a bin? Al's giving us a yes.
They're giving us a yes.
Nice.
4-day work week on the other side of this break. We'll be right back.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York. That was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money Podcast from NPR.
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt. The 4-day work week. It's not easy to say, but it does sound great, doesn't it?
It does.
You want to believe it's possible. But there's something in the back of your brain, a nagging doubt that says, come on, be real. Would my company ever actually give me another day off? And would I actually be able to get all of my work done in 4 days?
Yes. And guess what? Today's guest says yes and yes. She is a believer in the 4-day work week, an evangelist even. She says it is good for you, it is good for your employer, and it should be the future of work.
Juliet Shore is an economist and sociologist at Boston College. Her brand new book is called 4 Days a Week: The Life-Changing Solution for Reducing Employee Stress, Improving Well-Being, and Working Smarter. Juliet Shore, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
Yes. And our question for you, our listeners, is this. If your boss offered you a 4-day work week starting tomorrow with no pay cut, could you get all of your work done? And what would you do with that extra day off? And employers, we want to hear from you as well. Would you offer this to your employees? Could they be as productive? We want to hear from you as well. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube, drop those comments in the live chat.
So I actually had a different question I was going to start with, Juliet, but now I'm looking at the comments coming in from our listeners, mm-hmm. like Sandy and others, and they're like asking what we actually mean by 4-day work week. And so what you're trying to study, and I want to make sure we all understand this, is not necessarily working 10 hours a day, 4 days a week, but actually working 4 days a week and working fewer total hours. Like, that's what I think you're most interested in, right? As an object of study.
Absolutely. It's a really important place to start with this conversation, because people immediately go to the 4-10s. And, you know, those have some benefits, but a lot of downsides too. So we have been following companies since early 2022. Hundreds of companies all over the world, over 10,000 employees, and they're getting a 32-hour work week, so 4 8-hour days, no reduction in pay. And we have a tremendous amount of data from the employees, from the companies, about what happens when you shift to this model.
Okay, so thank you for clarifying that first. And then I want to backtrack even further, because we never ask ourselves this question, and Cherry brought it up earlier. Mm-hmm. How did we even end up with 40 hours a week as the standard? You know, these 8-hour days, 5 days a week. How did we get here?
It's a great question. So the story of the 5-day, 40-hour week begins in the early part of the 20th century. At that time, there were 6-day weeks. So people worked Saturdays. Sundays, they did have off for the most part. One of the things that was happening was that Jewish people were starting to move towards Sunday as their Sabbath because so many people had to work on Saturdays. There were a lot of garment companies owned by Jewish owners, and you know, they were also shifting in that direction. So a group of Orthodox rabbis who really did not want to give up the Saturday as the Sabbath began agitating and organizing to keep this and to go to a 5-day week so that they could keep their folks
Give the Christian workers the Sabbath on Sunday, but then they could keep the Sabbath on Saturday. And now, you know, you sort of everyone's happy.
Right. So what happened was, like the movement I'm studying today, the first moves were all done by small businesses, and they tended to be these Jewish-owned garment businesses, lots of them. And they began giving their workers Saturday off. And the unions, interestingly, were kind of opposed to it at the beginning because they thought wages were going to be lowered. People working fewer days, they're going to get paid less. So they didn't come on board until later. So this really starts heating up in the 19-teens. And then in the 1920s, you start to get a sort of, it really starts to spread to construction workers and printers and retail establishments and so forth, because those early adopters, like the ones I'm studying today, were having really good experiences with this. And the interesting thing was, just like today, they were not seeing reductions in productivity. So, and we can get into why that is. For some of them, where it was factories, they were able to service the machinery on Saturdays. And so they could keep things going
better.
Things
didn't break as much, yeah.
Right. Where it was piecework, which a lot of those garment factories were, people just sped up what they were doing and got everything done in the 5 days that they had previously been doing in six. And the other thing, which is another thing we're seeing today, that Saturday work was kind of different in the sense it was more relaxed. It was sort of a less productive day. That's what's happening with Friday now. Which is, I have a lot of examples in the book, and there's sort of some hard data on this too.
And Juliet, I just wanted to jump in there because the other question we had about, you know, going from a 5-day work week to a 4-day work week is this, and this is a question Avi had, is would we all just get Friday off, or would it be something different where a business would still operate 5 days, but then the employees would be staggered? How would that shake out?
There is no one size fits all. So Fridays off is the most popular way to do it. And the majority of the businesses in our studies are doing that. But you have some where they want to maintain their full hours of operation. Half the people get off on Friday, half on Monday. Some people take Wednesdays. Some have a rotating day. Some allow people to take off whatever day they want. So The model is totally flexible that way, in that it really has to fit the circumstances of the business. I mean, we've got healthcare organizations, we've got restaurants, you know, we have like residential care facilities. So in these studies, so, you know, some of them are 24/7s and they figure out how they can do it. If you're already operating outside of that 40-hour time slot, you're already sort of doing something different. And this is just another way to do that.
And one of the things you talked about is that people are still able to get all their work done, the 40 hours worth of work done in 32 hours. How are you finding these efficiencies?
Okay, so I want to put a little asterisk on that, which is that in the book, I talk about two different models. One is called the 180-100 model, where people get 100% of the pay. They work 80% of the time. but they have to do 100% of the work. And in some companies, they even ask people to sign contracts for that. The second group is the 180-80s, and I'll get to them. That's more, and I think we're going to talk with a healthcare hospital chain, and they're doing things a little bit differently. But let's stick with the 180-100s. Those are the most of them. I think the most important thing to understand is this is not primarily about individuals figuring out how can they get all their work done in 4 days. It's a whole organization reset. And in the trials that I've been studying, there are 2 months of what we call work reorganization. So the company, the organization, or the company comes together and spends a couple of months figuring out, what are we doing that is wasting time? Mm-hmm. So meetings are a huge part of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're just way too many meetings, take too long, too many people have to go to them. They figure out how to give people more focused time. So with fewer distractions, they're better able to get their work done. They figure, I call it a forcing mechanism. They figure out what they're doing that isn't really adding to the bottom line. So although individuals do things and figure out how to work more efficiently, and we have a scale that people fill out before the trial starts, and then at 6 months, 12 months, 24 months, it's called a work smart scale. And we see increases in working smart. But it's primarily because the culture changes, the organization changes, and they figure out together how to do it. Mm-hmm. In the manufacturing companies that we have in our research, they sort of go through every step of what they're doing, and they figure out, well, we could do this in this order, right, or we could change this up.
Let me get a new machine. Let me just bring in a few comments here, and we want to hear from you out there. Anno on YouTube says, as it stands, my weekend days are a mix of chores and trying to relax. If I had an extra day, I could dedicate 2 to chores and 1 to rest, and I believe I would experience less burnout at work. I never fully catch up or fully relax on weekends. Yeah. Email from Maura. This is a good one. I would give my left foot for a 4-day work week. As a single mom, it's tough to be able to balance 5 days of full-time work, my kid's schedule, plus all the other household duties. One extra day would make my life a million times easier and less stressful. Would love to hear from more of you. Studio2@WHYY.org or give us a call, 888-477-9499. Before we bring in the company that you alluded to earlier, Juliet, I wanted to ask you a question based on what you were just talking about. It's the obvious question. You mention it in the book. If you can find all these efficiencies to allow a company to get the same amount of work done while everyone works less, why not just keep a 5-day week and implement those efficiencies and get even more done, supercharge your productivity? Why not? Why not do it that way?
It's such a great question. I asked quite a few people in the research why. It was the first question that I got asked when I did my TED Talk rehearsal by the head of TED. There are two pieces to it. One is what one of the people I interviewed told me, which was that they're just too busy keeping their head above water. They can't find the bandwidth to do it. Now, that's not a very good answer.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's the right one, because you should be able to do that. The second one is, these companies are asking for more from their employees in various ways, although we also measure work intensity and it barely goes up. So it's really not a speed up. But if you came to your workforce and said, you know, we just want to make you more efficient and more productivity in 5 days, and you weren't offering them more money or something.
Yeah. There's no carrot. There's no tit for tat there.
Right. Are they going to do it? Why are they going to? This is what gets the buy-in. People
love these companies. It motivates the employees to do it.
And they feel they've been given a gift. I have a whole discussion in the book about the reciprocity. It is a reciprocity. And we've got, I mean, those people who wrote into you that you just read, straight out of the pages of my book. We've got, we measured like how much more money people would have to get paid to go to a back to a 5-day week, and something like 13% say no amount of money could ever entice me.
Wow. And by the way, Domi R on YouTube said there will never be a 4-day work week because the sole responsibility of employees is to increase its profits for shareholders. So Domi R is very skeptical. And so that's why we wanted to hear from someone local who has shifted to a 4-day work week. So we're going to bring in Jenny Gilliland, a clinical director of infusion service at Fox Chase Cancer Center. They have implemented the 4-day work week for nurse managers. Jenny, welcome to Studio 2.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So Jenny, tell us, how did it work at your company? Like, who got to do this 4-day work week and how did you roll it out?
Yeah, so we had new CNO leadership about 5 years ago. And shortly after she came, she was really looking to like be progressive and understood that nurse managers and leaders, we experience a lot of burnout. So 5-day work week, a lot of these units run 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. So she, like you mentioned, you were just talking about, it's a gift, gave us this gift and said, figure it out. And we did.
All right, so you figured it out. You're getting your work done, Jenny, and the same amount of work. You're getting it all done?
All done, and more, probably.
And more, probably. How? So how more? Give me the more part of it. Like, how do you, what, now that you look back at what you were doing before when you were working 5 days, how do you explain how you get all that done in four days, maybe even more?
I think that, that ability to be home that extra day makes us as a team more productive at work because you have to get your things done within the 4 days if you want to be off that extra day. And also, when I am off, it doesn't bother me to answer an email or to hop on a quick call if needed because I'm just so grateful to not be in the office that day.
Yeah. Mm. Question. So what changed in how you structured the coverage, the type of works that you do, communication? What shifted to make that something that was very feasible and streamlined so that folks could have that extra day off?
I think, and you guys had mentioned this earlier, it's all about the culture. You all have to be in it together to make it work because you need a clear coverage plan. A lot of us, so I am a director, I have a manager, an assistant nurse manager. So we rotate the day based on what's going on in our calendars. We make sure to not take the same day. We really communicated with our staff, like this is a new thing we're rolling out. Mm-hmm. And so the staff had buy-in. We wanted the staff to know that even though we're not there every day, you are supported. Someone is there for you.
All right, Jenny, I run a competing healthcare facility. I would love to have you on my team. What do I have to offer you to get you to work 5 days a week for my company? What type of pay raise would I need to give you? Would any amount of money lure you away at this point?
No, not right now. I have 3 children. I'm a working mom, and that's how I recruited the managers that work under me, is to offer them this 4-day work week. I don't know. You'd have to give me $100,000.
I don't have the money. Dang it.
And Jenny, I mean, real world, though, what are you able to do now? You mentioned you're a mom. What are you able to do now that you couldn't do when you had to work 5 days a week?
Yeah. So in talking back to efficiency, I schedule all the appointments I need to for my family on that day. So I'm not leaving work early. I don't have to come in late all the time. I can succinctly work my day when I'm there to be fully present. It's just allowed. And you guys were mentioning earlier, and I'm able to relax on the weekends.
Because you had that third day. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, must be nice. Yep. Jenny Gilliland is a clinical director of infusion service at Fox Chase Cancer Center. You're giving us hope. Jenny, thanks so much for hopping on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so I have so many questions based off of that, and I know we have callers and commenters, and I'm going to get to some of them. But, okay, so Juliet, you brought this up in your research, that a lot of people take that extra day, and they do things like schedule doctor's appointments, maybe go to the accountant, whatever. It seems to me that that would only work in a world where some people are working 5 days a week because the doctor's office is open, the accountant is taking clients. Like, I wonder how durable that impact is if indeed more and more people adopt that 4-day work week and it becomes closer to the standard.
Yeah. I mean, certainly if you have those sort of client facing businesses that aren't open on the day that everybody else is off, that's not going to work. But I mean, that's something you could figure out. So you could have rotations and so forth. I think that's, you know, in a way, once we're really farther down this path of moving toward a 4-day. I mean, I think one of the big questions would be, is this going to be like the current setup where we have those 2 days that everyone has off or not? One interesting thing in our findings, I mean, we have like 20 different well-being measures that we follow, and all of them show improvement. But one thing we asked was, if people have 3 consecutive days off, do they get even more improvement than if, say, they had the Wednesday off?
Mm.
Turns out the answer is no.
Oh, wow.
So the Wednesday off is just as good. So I think there are a lot of different ways to do this. And the other thing is about the how the businesses do it, how the organizations do it. We also find lots of different ways. And we can get into those 180-80s because they're another really fascinating set of organizations that aren't asking for 100% of productivity, but they're making it work too. And I can explain why that is.
And I want to bring in this caller and just wedge in first, though, a quick follow-up. So it seems like you're not necessarily advocating for a 3-day weekend where everybody has these same 3 days off. You're simply saying people work 4 days a week, and those 4 days can be whatever 4 days of a 5-day work week fits in that person's schedule or their company schedule.
Right. I mean, most of them are taking the Fridays, and a lot of people say they love having that 3-day weekend. It just isn't, but they're getting benefit from it, but so are the people who take off a Wednesday or a Tuesday or a rotating.
That's fascinating.
Day.
Yeah.
We're going to bring in Eve from Kennett Square, who's on the line. Eve,
mushroom,
you're on Studio 2.
Capital of the world.
Eve, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi. So I work Tuesday through Friday. It wasn't my choice when I got my job offer. I'm a hospice social worker. They just, you know, didn't have a big enough caseload for me to work 5 days. And initially I wasn't sure, you know, if I was going to be making enough money and stuff. But now that I've been doing it for about a year and a half, I agree with the other person who said there's really no way I feel like I could go back to working 5 days.
Mm. Wow.
Great comment from Eve in Kennett Square.
So once you go for a day, you're never going back.
Sort of like Pringles. Once you pop the fun, don't stop, you know. But let me ask you real quick before we get to this break. We have about a minute and a half, Juliet. Like, so many people are describing that feeling of going from 5 to 4 and how liberating it is. But then if you get to a world where 4 is the expectation,
it's the norm.
Right.
Yeah.
Do some of those good feelings and some of those motivations that you talked about earlier to get all your work done, does that start to wear off? And I know you don't have the crystal ball to look 100 years into the future. You have a couple years of data. But that would be the thing I would worry about the most as an employer, that this is sort of an era of good feelings, and it will fade as this kind of just becomes the norm. And then productivity will indeed drop.
It's a great question, and it's one we worried about too, which is why, although we had originally just planned to do this 6-month study, because these companies are doing trials for 6 months, and then they figure out whether they're going to stick with the schedule. Virtually all of them do, by the way. So we went back at 12 months, we went back at 24 months. No change in the well-being, no change in the productivity results that we're finding. So they are sticking. I think one of the reasons is, given that it's still a 5-day world out there, if you're at 4, you're still grateful. You're still really happy with it. Now, where we would be, like, maybe if we all get this 10 years from now, I can't say. But, you know, by that time, think about how much AI will have come, how much productivity increase there's going to be. We could even, you know, start thinking about going to 3.
That seems like just a huge point, though. And I just want, I know we're going to push the break back a little bit because I just want to narrow down on that, because so many of like those good feelings and those good benefits you described come from how the employees feel. And I do wonder if that feeling fades with time, if it indeed becomes the standard. Like, like the fact that you feel grateful to your employer and so you want to stay. The fact that now the employer can retain more people because they're very attracted by this rare 4-day work week. It's like this, you know, rare gem. Yeah, it's like how do you imagine it? How do you envision it sort of maintaining its momentum over time if it becomes like truly standardized or closer to standardized?
Well, I think as it, remember, more and more companies come on board with this schedule, they're all going to be getting that productivity increase. And then, I mean, you've got this ongoing productivity increase. So the question is then, you know, what do you do with it? And so the employer could continue to use that in a way to benefit workers, either by giving them more money or by giving them even more time off. So I see it as a very dynamic process. Mm-hmm. I mean, the early adopters get the much bigger competitive advantages, but everybody's going to get it eventually.
Yeah.
And then I guess on the other side of this break, mm-hmm. we have to talk about what's in it for the employers, because that's what Roni brought up, was this idea of like, why would they be into this? And you do answer that in the book.
Yeah, and I also want to talk about artificial intelligence. You just brought that up. That is going to be a big issue, could bring more efficiencies, but there's a lot of fears behind that too. So lots of comments to talk about on the other side of the break as we continue our discussion, a 4-day work week. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Before we go back to our discussion about the 4-day work week, we have a 4-day reminder.
Beginning next week, we will be live on Mondays in addition to our Tuesday through Thursday lineup. That's one extra hour a week of our show right here on WHYY and our expanded video live stream, which includes YouTube, Facebook, and TikTok. Yay!
Make sure to follow and subscribe to WHYY on those platforms to catch the show on whichever one you like best. And again, reminder, it's this coming Monday, June 9th. Mark your calendars to join us for our very first Monday show. And of course, every Monday at noon after that.
So now back to our topic for today, the 4-day work week. We have Juliet Shore with us. She's an economist and sociologist at Boston College. Her brand new book is called 4 Days a Week, The Life-Changing Solution for Reducing Employee Stress, Improving Well-Being, and Working Smarter.
Lots of great comments coming in. We've been asking you, if your boss offered you a 4-day week starting tomorrow with no pay cut, could you get all your work done? And what would you do with that extra day off? Hey, if you're an employer, we'd love to hear from you too. Melissa emailed us and said, I work 4 days a week mm-hmm. as a house cleaner. I'm the only employee. On Monday, I go to the doctor and get chores done. I love working 4 days a week. Agree? Disagree with Melissa? Give us a call. 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org or leave a comment in the YouTube chat.
Yeah. And before the break, Avi alluded to this question, you know, if what do employers get from this? And if there is a benefit, why aren't more employers doing it?
Yeah, great questions. So for many of them, what they're seeing is either their productivity is staying the same, but their employees are a lot happier. They're less likely to leave and so forth. So they are benefiting from that. For some of them see it as a sort of business strategy. And those are often those 180-80 firms that I talked about. They are places where they were losing so many employees because people were so stressed out. If you look at the stress levels of American workers, but also workers all around the world, they're at record levels. They started to come down a little bit from the pandemic, but that stalled out. I mean, we've got like half of the people saying they were stressed a lot of the day, two-thirds of them kind of struggling, disengaged, quiet and loud quitting. So one thing we're seeing in many of these companies is that they can stop the bleeding. The nurses studies are a great example. There are mm-hmm. two of them in your region in which we have people who tell us that when they announced those 4-day weeks for the nurse managers, people rescinded their resignations.
Yeah.
I mean, because nurses are just burning out and leaving the field mm-hmm. in droves. We have one company, it's a media, like advertising company, digital media, specializing in that, they had 30% turnover on their teams. And when they put in the 4-day week, zero turnover. Nobody leaves.
And, but my follow-up to that is, you know, the pandemic was very stressful for everybody. I mean, the great resignation touched all sectors. A lot of that has slowed. So once things return or get closer to normal, what is the business case for employers when overall the world is just a little bit less stressed? Is that incentive to switch to the 4-day work week still there?
So the quits are still running at high levels compared to the past. So they're not where they were at the peak of the Great Resignation, and unfilled vacancies are not where they were, but they're still really high and the stress levels are really high. And what we are learning is that, number one, those well-being impacts have a really strong relationship to people's productivity, so that when they report higher well-being, they also are displaying this big jump in productivity that comes from the beginning pre-trial, where we measure people's productivity. Now, these are self-reports, but then to 6 months later and then 12 and 24. It's also showing up in a lot of the metrics that businesses use, the so-called KPIs, the OKRs. You take those nurses' studies. All the ones I've seen show higher patient outcomes when you have reduced.
So it's a ripple effect on the people they serve. Yeah.
And I guess I do understand, you talked about the idea that employers are less likely to resign. And retention is huge for businesses. It's very costly to train up new people. It's very costly to lose people. I get that. But I still come back in my gut to Cherry's question, which is, if these benefits are as sort of widespread as they seem to be in your study, why aren't more businesses doing it? Because whatever you think about businesses, they're pretty darn good at finding ways to save money, if indeed there's a way to save money. So why isn't there wider spread adoption if indeed the data is as strong as you've laid it out?
Yeah. So the first thing I would say is, in many ways, it's a new idea. I mean, it's been around forever. Richard Nixon advocated for a 4-day
week. Keynes was saying we were going to be working, what, like 20 hours a week or something, right?
Yes, exactly. But it didn't penetrate. And there really wasn't much research at all on what would happen and how would businesses fare. So, you know, until we did these trials, large numbers of companies, we really didn't have this kind of evidence. And I think we are now starting to see that change in businesses. So, for example, last year there was a study, a survey done by one of the big accounting firms, where they found that 30% of all business leaders were considering a 4-day week. So it's starting to get there. But there's a lot of resistance, I think, especially in the big firms, to change. If you take something like work from home, like, we had the technology for work from home for decades, right?
Yep.
But nobody was doing it, like a couple of percent of the workforce, because they didn't think it would work. But it did. Productivity has been really high with work from home, but yet they're still calling people back in.
I think that's, you're describing hive mind, pack behavior, tradition. Like, it's just hard to move out of a standard, out of a tradition.
I think so. And it's also the case that I'm not going to tell you that this will work in every company the way it has worked for the ones we've had. I'm not going to say that, because I don't think it's true. It will work for a lot more companies that are doing it. And then as we start to move down that path, other companies are going to have to figure out how to make it work, because they'll be the laggards, right? They'll be disadvantaged in the labor market rather than being so advantaged, which is what we're seeing with the ones who are doing it now.
And I want to bring in a caller. We have Laura from Lindenwald, New Jersey on the line. Laura, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hello. Yes, I'm Laura from Lindenwald. I don't know if you want me to mention my company, but we used to do something called 980, where we had to work 9 hours, then a Friday, half of a day, then the following Friday we were off. But COVID came and changed the whole game. Mm-hmm. And so our company adopted, first, allowing us to work from home, of course, because of COVID. But then they went into a hybrid mode, as they called it, where then they had us come into the office and work 10 hours a day for four days and be off on Friday. But they didn't require us to be in the office for the whole 10. Mm. So what they do is they allow you have to come into the office for 3 days. You only really are required to kind of work 5 or 6 in the office. It's your discretion. So then you have the other day at home working from home, and then you have that other you have Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and it is awesome. The question asked about would you trade? I don't think so, because we do get paid for the 40 hours, and we are very productive. I also think that they found savings, because what they were also able to do, because of allowing people to work from home, they could close down certain offices, so all of that, you know, overhead monies and things like that, that's where they saved money. So when you talk about the productivity and all that, yeah, people are product because they love being able to. I love being able to go to the doctors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just run back home and get online. And I'm
Laura is.
I can feel your happiness emanating.
Your joy from working.
Thank you so much, Laura. Could I just ask a real quick follow-up, though, because some people are still skeptical, Juliet. Mm-hmm. This is Lawrence sent us a comment. Jacques Chirac of France, was the president of France, pushed through a 32-hour work week thinking it would increase employment. Failed. Think about the wasted opportunity in healthcare, specifically hospitals not open 2 days a week. Why not drive efficiency by having 7-day work week with 3 days off where you have the opportunity to rotate? So I use that as a springboard for talking about the international situation and how America compares. And also, like, what are the limits to this? What's like the lower end limit of like how much you could reduce without actually creating major, you know, economic issues?
Yeah. So first of all, no hospitals are going to close for 2 days.
Yeah, and, yeah. I didn't quite understand that part of there. But
and
yeah.
They went to 35, and it wasn't a failure. It was the workers traded off flexibility for shorter time because they had a lot more rights and sort of rigidities. French situation, I think, has not really been so well understood. But the point about the international is really important because our working hours in the U.S. are so long compared to others. Yeah. And what we're seeing is that we are, these European countries especially are moving ahead of us in terms of implementing this model. I mean, we've had national government-sponsored pilots in quite a few countries, and we've done that research. In some of them, the Polish just announced they're doing a trial. The Spanish just reduced the work week for the whole country down to 37.5. Even Japan has shorter hours than the United States now. Younger people may not know, but Japan used to be the workaholic country. The city of Tokyo just put all of its employees onto a 4-day work week. In the Middle East, some of the UAE, the city-states, have gone to 4.5 days. So it's... everyone else is pretty much ahead of us at this point.
Yeah.
Not everyone. The Chinese are behind us. But, you know, as Cherry said, developed countries, they're all ahead of us here.
By the way, you got a shout out from Jocelyn on YouTube who said this conversation is so important. Thank you, Studio 2 and Juliet Shore. The research found 4-day work weeks and flexible schedules is compelling, but I think the cultural shift is just as critical. Also, David B on YouTube says AI will help us get to the 4-day work week. Mm. And so I got to ask you about AI because we only have a couple of minutes left. You know, how will this, could this be the thing that helps us become or give employers, you know, the feeling that we could be more efficient and could get rid of that fifth day and get us down to those 32 hours a week? Your thoughts on how AI could impact this movement?
Absolutely. And I've got a chapter in the book on AI. It's really important. So when we started this research, ChatGPT hadn't come out yet. But we did add questions. And one of the things that survey data is showing now, and this is from other researchers, that companies on a 4-day week have much more proficient use of AI. And we believe that's for two reasons. One is they're innovative and so forth. But the other is that they need it more because they have less time to waste. And employees will be much more willing to put in the time and learn and use that AI because they're going to be less worried about losing their jobs. I mean, that's a really important thing. And there's a lot of complexities around AI. I'm not an AI evangelist by any means, but if you do want to implement AI in the workplace, going to a 4-day schedule is a really good strategy.
But real quick, you do note in the book that technology and progress in that realm doesn't always equal less work because in the early days of the Industrial Revolution,
more
we ended
work.
Up working more. So it's not always this straight line that you imagine. Is that right, Juliet Shore? Real quick.
Absolutely. Yeah. So first Industrial Revolution, big increases in hours before workers fought to get them back down. And what we're arguing now is don't make us go through that again. Don't lay all these people off and work the other people even harder. Like, share the work. Do it humanely.
Well, thank you for sharing your work with us, Juliet Shore, economist and sociologist at Boston College and author of a brand new book. It's called 4 Days a Week, the life-changing solution for reducing employee stress, improving well-being, and working smarter. Juliet, thanks for your time on Studio 2.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yes, learned so much. And thank you to everybody who emailed in. By the way, it's DJ of the Day.
Should we reveal it?
We have a winner, DJ of the Day winner. So go ahead. Rich is the winner, right?
Rich is the winner. He picked Working at the Car Wash Blues by Philly's own Jim Croce. By the way, shout out for David and Glenside who suggested Factory by Bruce Springsteen since we're doing that tribute band contest today as well.
Let's
but
take
Rich,
a listen.
You are the winner. Let's hear a little Jim Croce.
But did I get myself straight? I guess I just have to wait in my rubber suit to rub on these cars. Well, all I can do is shake
my head. I feel like working, and we're working. We'll be at 4 days next week. And by the way, thank you to our producers for putting everything together. Our producers are Debbie Builder, Paige Murray Besser, Andreas Copes, Mike Schiffler is our visual producer, Al Banks and Tina Calique engineered today's show. Our executive producers, Kevin McCrory, and Joan Isabella is WHYY's audio general manager. From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philly, I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi. We'll see you.